Yeah. We can go back to the question about the changeover from working kind of on your own with fishing and farming.
Yeah, it was. Fishing and farming was more exciting or more interesting, it seemed, than going at the shipyard. Well, you went there to get a check to start it, going up there to get money to improve the farm or tax money. Mm-hmm. Where before we got that off of the fishing, you know.
And it was when the fishing died out that you went to the shipyards?
Yes. Before we quit fishing, there was a bunch of bugs that came in the water, like green bay flies, and they came in so thick that you could shovel them away from the hole. And when I was a little kid, I remember of drinking water out of the bay with a shovel, and that water was just as nice and clean. And then this pollution would come through and work out towards Lake Michigan. And would drive the fish back into the lake, and the ones that were caught in the nets, once they'd turn yellow, you knew that the bugs were going to be coming. But sometimes, if you didn't get to your nets for a couple of days, perch you could live twice a week. And by the time you would go, you could scoop up maybe 200 pounds of bugs away from the net for lifting one net.
When was that approximately?
That was in the spring of the year, but I don't remember, just sometime in March, I believe, that's when the bugs would come.
Was that in the 50s or the 40s?
Oh, that was in the 50s, I'd say. Okay. And they seemed to come earlier every year, and then finally we quit fishing because there wasn't enough fish worthwhile.
So did you feel you had any choice in whether you would work out instead?
Well, no, because there was no more fish, and you have to get your license, you have to turn in a fish report to the state, no matter if you catch one fish or 20 tons.
Now, is that expensive to do those things?
I can't recall what the license were, but you know, it's all extra bookwork when you gotta fill out this report, and you didn't make enough money to buy the paper or the stamps to mail it in. So there's a little bit involved to fishing besides just catching the fish. The state wants to know how much you caught and what kind of fish and so forth.
Did they ask those same types of questions the whole while you were fishing? When you first started, was the state as involved?
Yes, it was pretty much the same questions. Mm-hmm. How many pounds of fish you caught every month, you know. You'd have to give them a report of how many 100 pounds of perch and how many tons of herring, and they had different columns. You could put pounds or tons and so forth.
Did you do the bookwork or did your wife?
Well, I usually took care of the fish reports myself. I didn't want the state to know exactly how many we had. We just we wanted to lie a little bit.
Yeah. Did you eat many yourself?
Oh, yes. We did. We ate a lot of fresh fish, and we sold a lot of fresh fish here, and the ones that weren't the best, we'd always sell them at the fish house. And my dad would smoke herring about 300 pounds at a time. And we had people coming from Manitowoc and Milwaukee and all over just to come and get smoked fish and fresh fish from home instead of going to the fish house.
How did they hear about you? How did you get your customers?
Well, my dad had started that years ago as a sideline. And I guess they all knew how good he could smoke fish. Mm-hmm. So they all came up there to get smoked fish, and years ago we'd get muskies and they'd buy some of them. So they'd take perch and herring and the works, and they'd usually come and get some for a bunch of their friends at the same time. So it was a worthwhile trip when they'd come over.
Now, did you have to worry about keeping track of that, what you sold there?
No.
There's no...
There. No way that the state could find out about that, so we just...
Sort of a private thing,
too. We just guessed at a figure that we thought they should receive and nailed it in. Mm-hmm. Of course, the same thing goes with farming right now. They send these farm censuses, and I haven't filled any for quite a few years. And 1 year, they called up the wife, and she said, they asked her a bunch of questions, and she said, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. Finally, he got sarcastic, so then she hung up on him. And now they send me the second questionnaire, and I pull it in file number one. Both of them, and all the letters that they send, now they don't even bother to call anymore. So
do you feel like it's, I wonder about fishing too, if it, you feel like it's was too much interference from the state?
Well, I would say it was, yeah, but I guess it's even worse with the farm now. They want to predict a good crop or a lot of beef or a lot of pork, and it isn't true. Their statistics are way off. I think this year they're gonna have to import more beef than they ever did after the sellout. All this young beef that they're selling in now is not gonna go on the market as 11, 12, 1400 pound beef, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of light beef going in, and you're just not going to get that much beef. If you butcher them at 600 pounds or butcher them at 1,200, there's a cut in half, you know.
Yeah. You've been active in farm organizations, right? In political kinds of things. Were you ever active in anything with fishing? Or was there any kind of organization?
No, there was no organization that I know of for fishing. They were just, when this pollution came about, we tried to do something about it, but we had a kind of a sleepy assemblyman. He said he couldn't do anything about it, and I don't think he ever brought it up.
Would you tell me his name?
Lawrence Johnson. Okay, thanks.
So did someone actually go to him? What kind of work?
Well, it was just a group of fishermen that met together, and the leader was Godfrey LaViolette. He was an old man, and he knew that something had to be done to clean up the water, or we weren't going to have any fish. But Lawrence Johnson didn't pay any attention to us. But then he rode into some congressman or senators in Michigan, and then they finally started action. I don't know if it's because of Godfrey LaViolette, but somebody had to put the pressure on them, or they never would have started that. And it got awful bad here for a while. You could smell the alewives after they planted them. You could smell them from here, you know. That's when the kids went to reserve a picnic table at the park here and came back and said the picnic tables were all taken. And then in the afternoon we went and see how many people were in the park, and there wasn't a soul there, but you had to hold your nose to drive to the park. So that's how the water changed from drinking it out of a shovel to being polluted so bad that you don't hardly want to swim in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's that much difference.
I was wondering too whether you felt like there was any overfishing done. I mean, as far as like the depletion of fish supplies.
I don't think there was any overfishing done because we had a new crop of herring coming in before this pollution got so bad. And them small herring were always so much better smoked than the bigger ones. And they just kept producing. When I was a little kid, they could go hook and line fishing and fill up barrels of herring, you know. Mm-hmm. But the water was clean in them days. Now, too many fish die before the fishermen can get a hold of them. Rolled up on the banks and they just pollute the shoreline.
I had another question on the tools. I wondered if you owned these with your father and your brother. How did the owning of these happen?
No, we each had our own set of tools. That's why most of them are homemade. The only tool that we shared was a saw rig that my brother invented, and we all pitched in for the expenses, the parts and the motors. The motor, he bought an old light power plant, and that was the power unit. And he rigged up a saw in a way on two runners that we could, after we had the engine started, just drop it in the ice and shove it ahead, and we would cut the ice almost through. So then there wasn't too much to use the handsaw for. We had that nice groove cut the width of the rotary saw, and it was all marked out, and before we let the water come up, we knew how thick the ice was, you know, and we'd set it to that depth. I would be cutting in dry ice, so it didn't matter how cold it was, it wouldn't freeze up, as long as you didn't go through the ice. So then when you had all the channels and everything cut, you just went, took the handsaw and started cutting some, and then most of the time you only had to cut one side of the channel and break that iceberg off that was already marked with that power saw. So that saved a lot of time and a lot of backaches.
Yeah. Were you the first ones in the area to do that?
Well, I'm not sure, but I know we were the first ones. Well, yes, in around Shoemaker's Point and up here we were, yes. Then they also came out with a ice drilling machine, which my brother rigged one of them up on, Nautilus. But that, we seen some out before we rigged one up. But see, we were fishing pond nets more than most fishermen are fishing mostly gill nets.
And why is that?
Well, that was my dad's line before we grew up, you know. So he had been fishing pond nets, and that's how come he had all these customers coming from all over to buy his fish. Because they knew that he had pond nets and he had fresh fish, you know. And that's where you use a ice rig the most is on pond nets, because you have to, if it's a 24-foot pond net, you have to cut a square 24 feet square on the ice, and your pond net goes down 24 feet. So it goes in 24 feet of water. It's more or less a square net where the fish come into.
So because your business was more with the pond net, it was more localized as far as who your customers were?
Well, yes.
Than the other fishermen around?
Yes. Because the other fishermen, or we even shipped some fish out to Chicago and all over. You put a good cover on the fish box and put a little ice with it and send them off by train to Chicago, or even by truck. After a while it went with the truck. But most of the gillnet were fish then. Well, the perch were lifted about twice a week on average. So occasionally you had some dead ones in, but I would say my dad was hauling herring to Green Bay, besides selling some here, when they were hauling them in barrels instead of fish boxes. So he started quite a few years ago.
Did he learn from his father?
No, his father was strictly a farmer. But my dad was living a mile and a quarter from the bay, and he just started fishing, and he liked it, and got my older brother started, and we'd build our own gill nets and pond nets, and there's a lot more than just fishing. You gotta, in summertime, you have to mend your nets and tar them, and you also have to, when you pull out your gill nets, if you want to preserve them, you have to boil them, and then you have to dye them.
What is dyeing involved?
Well, we'd get some green or wine colored dye, and we'd dye the nets, and they claim that it would preserve them, you know, rather than to just leave them boiled and nothing in the material, you might say. It's almost like material, only you're not using it all summer, you just use it in the winter, so they wouldn't decay as fast, I guess, if you dyed them as if you didn't. That was things that my dad learned before, you know.
And who did he learn from, though?
I don't really know. I don't really know. I know he was the biggest pond net fisherman at Shoemaker's Point all the years that I fished. But he did get a... together with the Shudwar brothers from Namur, and built pond nets for them and with them, and they learned to, for gill nets especially, you gotta have the right slack. You have two strings that hold this mesh together, and when you set it in the water, it floats, bring one string up and the other one down, and you have to have the right amount of mesh per foot to have the most fishing capability in the net. If you strung them too tight, the fish wouldn't get caught in them easy enough. They could back away. And then if you done it the other way, well, you'd get so many eel pouts and fish that you didn't want.
So they had to be a certain...
Yes, there's certain ways of stringing it that my dad knew about, and we just had one string there with every 6 inches there was some bluing on it. And that was our marks. Then we'd string the two other strings alongside, one on each side. And there was also different marks for sinkers and floats, and then we'd get to that point, we'd sew a float on, or a sinker, and then we'd keep going, and we'd get to the other sinker mark, was a little string tied on, and the float had two strings tied on.
So you had little ways of knowing how to do it.
We had to put a float and so forth. And we'd string that the full length of the hose upstairs, and we could so that in winter time, when it was too cold to be outside, we could build our nets. So.
And was that something your wife helped with?
I don't believe she done. Well, maybe she did do some stringing, but not too much. Because after I started fishing with the wife. We were fishing mostly pond nets. We didn't monkey with gill nets, just hook and line once in a while, but not much. Mostly pond nets and seining smelts. I'd say she handled maybe more tons of smelt than any woman around that I know of.
Yeah, that's something. Yeah.
We'd go and get a ton and a half of smelts at night, and then we'd load them up. Then I'd head for Green Bay after I took her home. Then she'd done the chores in the morning, and I'd try and sleep in the truck.
Oh, yeah.
Because if we were at too many, or too many guys were lined up at the fish house, they wouldn't take them all. They'd only take the first guys there.
Oh. So, was there competition that way?
Yes, there was competition. You had to be, the early bird gets the worm. You had to be there first. Or second, or whatever it was, and you just sat in the truck till your turn was there to unload.
Mm-hmm. What about, so it would be with the fishermen right around here that you'd be competing too?
Right. Mm-hmm. But one time the smelt were running real good, and we had 5 ton of fish, and we had a wagon and borrowed a big truck and hauled them to Green Bay, and then we had to come home with them because they were filled to the gills. Mm. So after that, that's when I started sleeping in Green Bay in the truck, because... So then we came home and dumped them in the manure spreader and spread them in the field and then disked them in the ground for fertilizer.
Did you need to talk to you then? Did you want to interrupt? It's okay.
No, he's just listening.
Okay. Yeah.
We don't talk about fishing too often.
Yeah.
So.
So did you teach your sons at all to fish?
No, because by the time the sons grew up, the pollution was so bad in the bay that there was no more fish. Yeah. Otherwise, we'd probably still be fishing.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Smelt fishing.
Smelt fishing, they done a lot, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But not not the commercial pond nets.
So there was no way you could really pass it on to your sons in the sense that it wasn't a viable trade anymore?
No, it wasn't worthwhile fishing anymore, so there was no point in teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
Smelts, they go smelt fishing now, yet there's still smelts coming up. But they just get some for our own use or for the neighbors. Or nobody has sold any recently. But we did sell quite a few to mink ranches besides fish houses. So they were using that for mink feed, but I don't know. There's not too many mink farms in there either.
Where were those around here?
There was 2 of them in Sturgeon Bay.
And about what year was that you were doing?
Oh, about 56, I guess we were selling them at a mink ranch.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever sell the alewives for oil?
No, I never fished alewives.
No.
The most alewives I saw was when the kids said that the picnic table was reserved, or the all the tables were reserved at the park. And there was a bunch of alewives along the beach and stinking.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about the DNR's planting fish in the bay?
Well, I don't know. Are they planting some in the bay or in the lake?
In the lake. I mean,
In the lake, I guess some of the fish that they're planting are being caught hook and line with these charter boats. And some are being caught with commercial fishermen too, although I guess they're trying to stop any commercial fishermen now. It sounded that way, I didn't follow that up, but at one time they didn't want to leave any new people get commercial fishing license.
Yeah.
so I don't know what's going to happen. I know after fishing commercially and catching tons of fish, I can't seem to waste my time going and fish all day for one fish.
So there's a real difference in fishing one way or the other.
If you never caught fish by the tons, I guess it's easier to fish for a few fish at a time.
Sure. Yeah.
But if you did catch them by the tons.
What about, like, how much of your income was in fishing? That one, say, the highest point? Can you estimate that?
Well, the first few years, about half of my income was in fishing.
And after that, it went down because there were fewer fish?
There was fewer fish and, and less price, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then with the smelts, if you got a lot of smelt, the price would go way down, so you had to catch them by the tons and not make as much money as when you'd get 6-7 cents a pound. You could make a few bucks with 500 pounds of fish. Now you had to catch them by the tons to make a few bucks.
Were you fishing during the Depression then?
No, I wasn't.
Old. No.
I probably was going along with my dad and fish and my brother, but.
Yeah. Do you know how they made it through that? Did the fishing help much?
Yeah, I guess the fishing helped quite a bit. There was a lot of fish at that time. Mm-hmm. And they also, my dad also hauled some hay across the bay to Marinette or Oconto. They used to go across. I don't know, they had like a wagon train that would leave most of the time from Sugar Creek here, and they'd go right across the bay. And they'd stay up there and overnight, you know, come back the next day.
Yeah. So did you ever do that?
I never did it myself.
Before your time?
Before my time. Yeah. But I remember of my dad going to Green Bay a lot of times. Also, he'd take fish to Green Bay and he'd come home with a load of flour, believe it or not. He was also selling flour and soap and matches.
Oh.
He had a franchise, maybe you might call it. He would buy, can't remember the name of the places, but he'd buy all that stuff wholesale, or like a storekeeper, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'd sell flour. A lot of neighbors would come to get flour and coffee, and even some of these farm matches, you've seen them already, stick matches about 2.5 inches long.
Sounds like he was into a lot of different things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we were at a family of 13, so.
Mm-hmm.
When you got 13 mouths to feed, well, then and them too.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of grub.
So, of the 13 children, two of you fished?
No, there's. I and Harry and Harold, three of us, and then two brother-in-laws started fishing too.
Mm.
And my father-in-law started fishing.
Who were the brother-in-laws that fished?
Ray Farron, I believe he's on that picture. And Louis Cornett is the other brother-in-law. That boat, oh no, there's three brother-in-laws. George Dufek also. Bought some pond nets and was fishing.
So it was pretty much a family business.
Right. So, it It was nice. It's kind of hard to believe that you could keep warmer fishing on the ice, and it was so windy out there sometimes and cold, but yet you go at the shipyard and just work 8 hours on that steel. See, if we were fishing gillnets, we had a fishing shanty and we'd make fire. And sometimes we'd even boil our nets right in there. We'd take pepper and salt and a little lard and we'd fry some fish out there. And it's just, I can remember that just like when I used to bring the lunch to my dad and my brother when they were out in the farm with the tractor, you know. And there was enough lunch for me always, and I'd rather eat lunch out in the field than in the house. It seemed to taste better out there. I don't know why.
So how would you compare the work with farming with fishing?
Well, farming and fishing were both hard work on the back, and you didn't have to take physical aid when you were fishing and farming years ago. Nowadays, it's so mechanical that you really don't do too much hard work on the farm. You just run the equipment and the machinery and get them prepared and get them repaired. More or less, that's...
But at that time, were they similar kinds of jobs, would you say?
Well, see, the bulk of the work on the farm is in the summertime when you're harvesting. And then there was a little slack period between haying and combining. And that's when we tar the nets when it was good and hot. We tar all the pound nets and drop nets.